Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, a change in leadership for the A-State baseball program. The Howl on Wheels Roadshow continues. A couple of more events last week. Also, an A-State track and field athlete getting set to go to Nationals later on this week. Excited about that. But we're going to start with men's basketball, and we're pleased to be joined by associate head coach for the Red Wolves, our buddy T Butters. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate y'all having me out here. I know it's been a little time in the making, but I'm glad to be able to get by.
Yeah, I know. We had a gold medal winner on last week.
Oh, gosh.
He was easier to get on than you.
Well, that's a tough act to follow up, but see if we can make it happen.
Well, what a first year for you, the staff, this program. 20 wins, you go to the Sun Belt Conference Championship game, go to a postseason game for the first time since 1999, first postseason win since 91. What are you most proud of when you look back at year one with this program?
I think it's probably the growth. I mean, really, to be honest, we had a great group of guys. The guys were, you don't grow the way we did without the group of players that we had. But whenever you take a new job, and this was my first time actually coming into a program year one. I've been with other coaches that have been in place, but you know, it's a whole brand new everything, just to open the faucet, floodgates, and you're trying to figure everything out on the fly, not only for us as coaches, but for the players. And so just the growth from where we were at the start of the season, from scrimmages and practices, and obviously the exhibition games, we came out on fire and we thought we were going to win a national championship. And then, you know, you play some tough games early in the non-conference and have a couple battles that don't go the way you want, and to just grow from there, and the guys, the work they put in every day to get to us playing our best basketball at the best time of the year.
I know you don't have anything to compare it to because you said it's the first time you've done year one, but not NIL, but just strictly in the day of the portal. How much does that kind of help a staff come in and have the chance to speed up the learning curve?
Yeah, so when Brad Brownell took over at Clemson University, I was a student manager there. So I observed a first year as a student manager. So back then, it was the whole thing was the process. It's going to take, by year three, we're going to be where we want to be. We're going to get these high school kids. They're going to take time to develop in the system. Like with the portal now, it's, we saw it here. You can flip a roster and get the guys in that you want immediately. And I don't know if where that goes in the future. I know the COVID years have kind of led to a larger portal with older guys, and we were able to obviously grab guys, DeAndre Dominguez and LaQuill, even though he didn't play a ton, but guys that have played years and years of college basketball. Just doing that, getting those older guys, is going to give you a little bit easier of a head start than trying to do it with all those freshmen.
Before we shift gears here, because you mentioned LaQuill, and so this is a little bit about him, but it kind of goes beyond him too. What you guys did in year one obviously is really cool. But then you sit back and think, you had your full roster for a grand total of zero games.
Yeah.
And it really makes it pretty remarkable because, I mean, you know, LaQuill's one of the first guys you bring in, if not the first. You don't get two. And then T-Baby, yeah, in and out. So, I mean, you guys had this vision of what it could be, and then you never really got to play with the full tool chest.
Yeah, LaQuill was 11-7 in the MAC on a pretty decent team, started at Cincinnati. You're talking about a guy that's, you know, without injuries, is making a ton of money overseas next year as a pro, and one that, you know, was fighting for all conference in the Sun Belt, what, first or second or whatever team, you know, he's fighting for an all conference spot. So he goes down, and then T Ford's out. You know, he played the one game that he was hobbled in, but, like, you know, you're talking runner up for freshman of the year before. You got a pretty dynamic backcourt, him and Caleb together, with Caleb in the system that we implemented with Terrence. You know, we're pretty excited about that. But a lot of it went back to, you know, the guy like Caleb taking on what he took on. The ball was in his hands so much. Like, the ability to have a guy like him in year one. The cabinet could have been a lot emptier. So even though we lost a couple of those guys, we still had great, I mean, Taron Todd and, you know, DeAndre Dominguez, Isaiah, his growth, you can talk about growth that we talked about at the beginning, like what he did watching him. He's the example of what I thought was the coolest part about last year, him from the beginning to where he is now on and off the floor. But yeah, it would have been interesting to see with a completely full roster what could happen.
I do want to talk more about the team and the program, but I do want to backtrack, and I want people to get to know your story a little bit. So first off, tell us about your family. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Durham, North Carolina, and this is kind of how I got into basketball. I'm sure this is a good segue into the background. So my grandfather played baseball for the Pittsburgh Pirates. When he got done, he got in a bad accident, was the baseball coach at Duke for a couple of years, and then got into the administrative side, became the athletic director there with the Iron Dukes and all the stuff, and obviously eventually hired Coach Krzyzewski, who just recently retired. And so that's kind of my background of how I got into the sport or fell in love with the sport. I was going to Final Fours and doing all those things with Duke as a kid when I was young. So that was kind of my initial love. And so grew up in Durham right there around that program. Ended up going to Clemson University. Looked at some smaller schools and some different stuff, but just wanted to be at a big school a little bit, get a little distance from home, and ended up going there and worked with the basketball program there. And that's kind of how I've started the career.
Well, hang on. So how's that go? Because then we're going to bounce around a little bit. So how's that go when the news is I'm going to school somewhere not Duke? I mean, is that like, I get it, you just can't go to Carolina? Or
no, what's this is crazy. I actually, my top choice was to go to Carolina, which would have been crazy. I got put on the wait list coming out academically, like whatever. I got put on the wait list and got in, applied to like Clemson and Georgia and some other spots and got in all those. And UNC put me on the wait list. And so I was just like, you know what, forget it. I went down to Clemson and took a visit, had fun. And I was like, North Carolina is where I wanted to go.
How'd even that going, happen?
Just the difference in, I probably shouldn't go to Duke academically. I probably could have pulled some strings to maybe get in over there, but I don't think I would have been successful. And then just the student life and the Franklin Street and Chapel Hill and all the times that I've been over there, it was a good time. And so I just thought it would be a little bit of ways from home, but still close by. And I knew I wanted the ACC. I've always been about the ACC, so I thought it would have been a cool choice. But I'm glad, luckily, that Clemson's where I ended up.
You mentioned your upbringing and your grandfather, a big part of your story. I do want to spend a couple of more minutes talking about your grandfather, because Tom Butters was a guy that, did pitch for the Pirates, but I read somewhere he was scouted by a legend, Branch Rickey. And anybody who's seen the movie 42 has seen his connection to Jackie Robinson and obviously bringing him to help break the color barrier. But that had to be a pretty neat story to hear at dinner time.
Yeah, so all the baseball stuff was, even my dad was so young when he was playing that there's like no memories. So everything is just stories from my grandfather that kind of got passed down. But when he passed a few years ago at the funeral, getting to meet all the people that were just radio people for the Pittsburgh Pirates or people that he'd crossed paths with over the years from the baseball world. And there was always some story. He didn't really self-promote a lot of these stories. So it would be, you know, something random would happen and he would know this guy that knew something where Roberto Clemente would come up, and then he'd be like, yeah, I play with him, blah, blah, blah. And so it was never like sit down at the dinner table and like, here's a story. He just organically, some things would come up, and I'm still like, you could tell me probably five or six things about people he played with or knew that I still don't know. Like, it was just, you know, it was unique. He didn't talk about it a ton, but it was definitely cool to have someone that played in the major leagues as your grandpa.
You mentioned he hired Coach K as well, but that is an incredible legacy in itself. But another thing that I read about your grandfather was, you know, he was on the NCAA basketball committee when they were negotiating with CBS, and he was a big reason why that deal got done with men's basketball and the NCAA tournament. And at the time, it was a groundbreaking deal, a billion-dollar
TV deal.
First,
I do know this story. It was the first billion-dollar TV deal, CBS, for the tournament. He was on so many of the selection committees and all those different things, and his background ended up being after he got done playing baseball was with the Iron Dukes, was fundraising stuff. So he was always really good with the financial side of things. So orchestrating those type of deals with CBS and putting together that type of stuff was just something he was just good with people and the negotiations and those types of things. So it was cool. You know, that's obviously plays a big role into where the tournament's gone and certain things with college athletics. So pretty cool.
So he didn't sit around and there weren't a lot of baseball stories told. But obviously by the time you're of age and you are a basketball guy, what stories do you get out of him about hiring Coach K? Because it wasn't like that was some heralded move. A lot of people are not very happy about that decision back then. I think it panned out, but what'd he tell you?
I get a lot. I do have a good feel on the basketball stories. I remember they had interviewed with Coach K, interviewed a couple guys. I know they had Coach K like over for dinner or something with the whole family, with my dad and my aunt, who was my dad, obviously my dad's sister at the time. They had dinner and couple days later, they sat down and he asked my dad and sister, everybody in the family, to write what name you want, who you think I should hire based on here's my dad at 12 years old, like, help me. And so they all wrote down and put their names in a hat and they drew it out and they were all Coach K. And there's a story of, you know, when K interviewed, he let Coach K leave campus. And I guess he got to like the airport and my grandfather was talking with his right-hand man, his guy at the time, and was like, that's who we're going to hire. He's like, well, why are you letting him leave? And so they went back and forth a little bit, and then I think he like rushed to the airport and got him. And obviously it's worked out. The first couple of years were rough. I remember he had some death threats and some like, if you don't fire Coach K, like, we want you fired. We want, like, you're doing an awful job as an AD, all that stuff about Coach K his first few years, because they were a little rocky, I guess. But when he knew what he wanted, knew your character and knew Coach K's character, he knew that that was his guy. And so I remember he got one of those letters about fire Coach K. I think this was after year two or year three. Called K to his office. Coach K thought he was getting fired, and he slid a contract extension over to him and said, you're my coach for the next, whatever, 4 or 5 years. Don't worry about any of that stuff. And obviously from then till all through the 90s, early 2000s, until a couple of years ago, they were pretty decent, I guess.
Yeah, they did okay. You're also named Thomas. Where did T come from?
I guess in kindergarten, the teacher asked, you know, they're calling the rolls and they call out Thomas, and I guess raised my hand and said I go by T. Not out of nowhere. And so then it kind of just stuck with
that. Not everybody gets to give themselves their own nickname.
I don't know. That one stuck, I guess, in kindergarten and is going on ever since. And then I got my son, who's also Thomas Butters the Third. So keeping that legacy going a little bit.
It's a great legacy to have.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Wolves up.
We continue to visit with T. Butters, A-State Associate Head Coach, here on the Second to None podcast, brought to you by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. So you mentioned you go to Clemson, and you got involved with the basketball program right away. And I know over the course of your career in college basketball, you've performed pretty much every role there is as far as a basketball staff goes, but you started as a manager there, then became a GA at Clemson. And one thing that I think is impressive too, you go from being a GA and you spent a couple of years in high school. How do you think that kind of helped you long term?
And actually Dabo, so Coach Sweeney at Clemson was, I think, a wide receivers coach early in when I was there and he got the head coaching job right around the time when I was a GA and stuff, and he would play noon ball and we'd always play. And he always talked about, I think before he got to Clemson, he got out of the profession and was maybe a realtor or something for a couple of years. I got out after my GA year. I went and I coached as a high school coach, but I also was working as a financial advisor at Morgan Stanley. And so it gives a little bit of like, I'm doing coaching now because it's what I think I was called to do, and I love doing it, and I love helping the kids. But if for some reason tomorrow was my last day coaching, I know I can go find another. So it takes a little bit of the stress off of, I have to win this game, or we have to get this recruit, or we have to do this, because if I don't, I'm getting fired, and then what am I going to do with my life type deal. So it was cool to kind of do another profession for 2 years. Coaching high school was not exactly the teaching and all the other stuff that comes along with that what I wanted to do, but I know I knew I wanted to be around the game, and those 2 years helped me realize that coaching basketball is what I wanted to do full time and not as just kind of a side job.
So you went to, you know, as we talked about, ACC school, and you jump right in with the program. At what stage in this, when did you get to quit being Tom Butters' grandkid and start being T Butters?
Not yet, I guess. I just get the questions a lot. When I was at Clemson, obviously being in the ACC, every ACC tournament we went to, and there'd be broadcasts where they'd pan to me as a GA and be like, Tom Butters' grandson is. When I first got to Charleston Southern as an assistant, we went and played Clemson a couple years later, and the broadcast guy I knew, so he did a whole segment on being Tom Butters. Like, so all that stuff, I think I've carved out my own lane. It's kind of why I think I took the path I did, instead of probably could have made a couple phone calls and tried to get a GA or something to Duke when Coach K was there, or do something. I wanted to go to a place where I could kind of carve out my own lane and be my own self. And I think I've hopefully done a decent job of doing that. But the legacy of who he is and what he's done for Duke specifically, but also college basketball, is cool to, you know, I've got to a point now where it's less of living in the shadows and more of like, it's a cool legacy to kind of be a part of.
You're right. You have not taken the easy route at all. And you go from those 2 years in high school to Charleston Southern, and you were there for 9 years. And I talk about all the different roles that you performed in, but you were an ops guy, video coordinator, assistant coach, and then eventually the associate head coach. So I'm sure those 9 years in Charleston just had to be one big learning experience for you.
I would never change leaving and then trying to get back in the business, because obviously when I went to high school and then tried to get back in, it was hard to find. I wasn't going to just get an ACC job given to me. And so I found a job at Charleston Southern, and the coach there at the time gave me as much responsibility as I wanted. And so it really let me do pretty much every area of a program, you know. So I had to learn everything: recruiting, scouting, you know, early on and you don't really, if you go to a bigger school and there's 20 staff members, you got 8 guys doing this and 3 guys, you didn't get that. And we had a small staff. We had really good assistant coaches that are all now, I think, high major assistants or head coaches that were there when I first got the job. So I got to learn from good people, but I just got thrown into the fire and kind of got to learn and stay for a long time. I had a really good boss. He was there for almost 20 years at Charleston Southern, and working for him was great because of the responsibility he gave me. I think it really helped me to where I learned a lot of the offensive side of the ball, which is what I kind of coach now. Nowadays, he gave me a lot of freedom in that area.
When did you meet Brian Hodson?
Yep. So Coach B, a lot of stuff goes back to Duke basketball camp. So I think he's a year older than me, him and Coach Jamie. And we met at Duke basketball camp. It was literally just a million coaches a year apply to try to get into work Duke basketball camp, and they need 50 or 60 because they have a ton of campers. And we just happened to work the same week the first year. And I think he was driving down from New York, and camp would end on like a Wednesday, and the next one wouldn't start till like the Saturday. And I lived right there in town, and I'm like, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to drive back and forth, or what are you? Like, come crash at my house. So he'd stayed at my house, and then eventually got to like where we go to the lake house when he come down in the summers. And so I met him at Duke basketball camp, and we just kind of built a relationship there where me, him, and Coach Jamie were just like, hey, we're all trying to get our foot in the door in this coaching thing. And we had similar backgrounds, and we were similar age, and we enjoyed hanging out with each other. And so a friendship just grew from there.
So, like, I mean, it could have been any of you, say, 50 or 60 guys. So why was it that? You three?
We had some fun nights. We had some good times. So when you're 21 years old, you're coaching camp all day from like 6 in the morning until 10 at night. From 10 until the next morning at 6, you can either go play pick up basketball in Cameron Indoor, which is cool. We got to go play. So we go up there and play ball some nights. And then there's some nights where you could go out on the town. And so we would go out, and it just Brian was just in the same dorm where I was, and we were both going out, and I knew Chapel Hill in the area and said, hey, let's go. And we had a good time. And then one night turned to two nights. And then every night at camp, we were hanging out and just developed a friendship. Just luck of the draw who was there.
So then is it a race among you? Does like a gentleman's agreement here that whoever gets a head coach first, the other ones are coming?
It basically was at the time. It was when we were there at Duke camp, we was like, you know, we're trying to get in. Whoever gets a job, we're going to help the other ones out. But I think, obviously, you guys know Coach B, but for people that know Coach B, he's not going to – if you're not good at your – like if I would have been bad at my job at my last place, there's probably a couple other people along the way that are like, yeah, if Coach B gets a job, we're going to go with him type. I think as 20-year – naive 20-year-olds, we're like, yeah, let's all – do this together one day. And then 15 years later, it hadn't happened. It's probably not going to, but he gets a job, and Jamie and I are both at places in our career where we're looking to move. And I think, you know, we had done a decent job at both of our spots where we set ourselves up to come here and have some success.
Yeah. You'd spent 9 years in Charleston. So when you get that call from Coach Hodson, I mean, yeah. Was it an automatic yes? Is it something you had to think about a little bit?
No, it was an automatic yes. You know, we had talked a little bit as his career grew, as he obviously went to Buffalo, had success at Buffalo and then went to Alabama. And then, you know, he was fielding calls at Alabama over the past couple of years on prospective jobs. He would always inquire if I would be interested and if such and such actually came to fruition. And so when it did, I didn't, it could have been in Alaska or California. My head coach at Charleston Southern had basically said, you know, stay here as long as you want. You know, you can stay here for 100 years, but you've done every single thing you could at this program. When an opportunity comes, you probably need to take that opportunity. And so when it did come, he was like, yeah, absolutely, you got to do it. And so it was a pretty easy decision.
So that is a good boss, because you believe me, it's unfortunately, your business is full of head coaches that will do whatever they can to keep an assistant, yep. even at the cost of costing the assistant an opportunity sometimes. So yep. To see a guy that says, I want you forever, but it's time to go do your thing.
And he probably had, you know, I think he's nearing 60. He's been in the business for a long time. He just stepped down last year as the head coach there after 20 years. But I'm sure when he was young, he probably made some of those decisions. Like he would try to keep an assistant at all costs and stuff. But as he grew in the in the profession and realized that the relationships are going to last him past the game into his later parts of his life, I think he kind of realized that doing right by his people. And so the whole time I was there, that's how he kind of treated things. And it was a good boss to work for.
So you come in and you have the success from last year.
Yeah.
To win 20 games and to get a couple of victories in the postseason is great. And I think it says so much, and we've talked about this during the road shows with Coach Hodson, just how 8 players from a team that had that kind of success in this day and age come right in at the end of the season and say, hey, we're coming back. This is where we want to be. Even though many of them could have benefited much more financially in other places. Yep. Then on top of that, you turn in the number one recruiting class in the Sun Belt, the top 40 class nationally. So what is it? What's the magic formula here? Why do players want to be here? Why is this staff able to have the kind of success it's having recruiting-wise?
I think it starts, obviously, with Coach's vision for what he wants out of the program and what he wants out of each kid individually, and his track record of guys that he's recruited and got to where all these kids want to go, which is to play in the NBA, and the Brandon Millers and the Noah Clowneys and the guys that have been through, you know, when you have a track record, it's a little easier to do some of this. And then for the returners, I think a lot of it was the success and the growth that we talked about earlier that they had throughout the year. I think an Isaiah Nelson sees himself as, if you take a look 12 months ago, what he was to where he is now, he sees the growth. And if he gets another year of that, where does that take him? And so I think we all take pride in relationships. That's, you win with good players and you get good players by having relationships. And I think we're all still fairly young. We're fairly connected with people in the recruiting worlds and with these kids. And so it allows us to recruit the high quality kids that we have coming in. You talked about the recruiting class coming in. Josh Hill and Arshon, those are guys that pre-portal are Power 5 guys, no questions. Like it's there, and I think they'll probably start trending back in the next couple of years going there as these COVID players get out of college basketball with these extra years. But it's just relationships and hard work, and then setting a plan for those guys to see, you know, we know what it takes to get where you want to go, and this is how we're going to do it, and showing them the vision and those guys buying into it.
So it's interesting because at any point, kind of, not even pre-portal, we're really pre-NIL. If we'd have said, hey, Brian Hodson's reputation nationally is this dude can recruit his socks off. Why? And you just said, what's about building relationships? Unfortunately, coach after coach after coach talks about that this thing's becoming a lot more transactional than relational. So how do you guys still keep doing it?
I would argue it is 100% transactional. One is you got to find kids where it's not just 100% transactional. And when you get a guy here like Isaiah Nelson that spends 2 years in the community, on campus, go to a game, anyone that's listening, when you see Isaiah Nelson at a game, he's picking up kids, he's kissing babies, he's entrenched in Jonesboro in the community and with basketball. You know, you get enough hooks into a guy like Isaiah with people in the community and relationships and people looking out for him, and where that means something. Maybe he didn't have a lot of that when he was growing up, and now you have all these people that believe in you, buy your jersey, love you, all these things. And then on top of the relationship that we try to build with them, spending time with them daily, off the court, doing all those things. You know, you can take both sides as a coach these days. You can do all, if you got the biggest NIL budget, forget the relationships. Just buy the guys that, you know, you think can win. And if they don't work out, then they'll leave and you'll get a new group the next year. Or you can try to invest in, and I think you're going to get some of both, but try to find as many that want to be invested in as a person and build those relationships. And I think that'll help us, you know, get some of these guys and keep some of these guys that could get a little bit more money or more publicity or higher level, whatever, wherever else it is.
You mentioned those high school recruits, Josh Hill, Arshon King, and Justin Johnson. Those are the three highest rated recruits in school history coming out of high school. And then you look at the transfers, the Arkansas kids, Joseph Pinion and Rashad Marshall, and then Cody Head, the Lipscomb transfer. And then, the Sun Belt's leading scorer is coming in as well with Kobe Julian. And then you look at everybody else coming back. You work with the offense. That's your department.
Yep.
Is there enough ball to go around with this team?
I was looking the other day. It's a great problem to have. I was looking the other day. I was in my head. I was just thinking, here's roughly around what each guy, you know, I would think they would average if they were on a good Sun Belt team. Take them off of ours and just put them on a good Sun Belt team. What do I think they'd average? And then I totaled up all the points and it was like 132. And I was like, well, if we score 132 points a game next year, I don't think we're going to have any problems. But that's where the NIL piece, the transactional, the relationship all comes to one thing. Can you get our group of, we'll have 17 young men on the team next year, can we get that group of 17 to bond together and become a team like last year's team? I think we tightened the rotation down a little bit going into conference play, and that group of nine or so guys that played last year really liked each other, really had a good chemistry. Caleb was a big part of that. So that's going to be the test. I do think there's the way we play, how fast we play, get up and down, you're not quite able to play the 39 minutes a game at that pace, and you can get just as many shots as you would somewhere else in 30 minutes as you would in 37 because of how fast we play. So that style of play will help a little bit. So we're going to start blending them together and seeing how they all fit.
The construction of the roster is pretty fascinating, right down to the number you just said, 17. That's a big number. And a lot of times there are headaches to come with a big number. Talk about the decision you guys make as a staff to roll with that number.
Yeah, you got 17 guys. Practices, if you come to practice, they're fast-paced. First, nothing goes exactly how you plan. So yeah. I would love to say all, quotation, 10 guys are all going to be healthy throughout the whole. We saw it last year. We lost four or five guys for the whole season. So I think it's better now. I know in the other part of the state, they're talking about keeping only 8 or 9 guys total on the entire roster. Well, good luck practicing the way we practice with 8 or 9 guys in one walk-on. We need bodies. All of our guys, walk-ons including, you know, Zane Butler, you can call him a walk-on. He has 16 points in a conference game. So it's like all these guys are Division I players, no questions. And so it brings out the best in each guy. If you're DeAndre Dominguez and you know whoever's right behind you at your position, or you're Kobe Julian and you got this guy behind you at your position or in front of you, however, it brings the best out in each guy. So every practice is competitive. Everything we do in every practice is competitive, whether it's a shooting drill. If they play tic-tac-toe, we want it to be competitive. Like, it's everything we do, we want to be super competitive. And then you have to be brutally honest with the guys. Sometimes I've worked for some coaches that you want to cater to their feelings a little bit. So you'll probably play 15, 20 minutes here, you know, before the, if you sit down and tell them, this is where you're at right now, this is where we see your role. If you want to increase your role, this is what you have to do. And if you're straightforward with them, it makes it a lot easier. People think that kids these days are soft or need to be coddled. I think if you're honest with them, you can really push them and do a lot more than what people think you can in coaching these days. So that hopefully answers the question in a long roundabout way.
We can sit here and break down a million things here, but I do want to ask about one thing in particular, because I think it's a big part of next season and the way your team's going to look. You mentioned Terrence Ford and the fact that he wasn't able to play this past year. And we caught a glimpse the year before last, and you mentioned he was runner-up for freshman of the year, just how electric he is and how good he might be able to be. And I think the ceiling is just really, really high for him. But Coach Hodson had made the comment at one of the road shows. He said, look, it may have been a blessing in disguise in the long run, him being able to watch Caleb Fields run this offense. But I think people just forget sometimes how good Terrence Ford is. And I'm wondering, just how much are you looking forward to seeing him in this offense next year?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think when we were putting this class together in the spring, you know, some fans or some people, you know, who's the point guard? Who are they going to get? Who are they? I'm like, well, y'all forgot about Terrence Ford. I mean, the kid's one of the more, and I've only seen him a handful of times live because of the injury. I've seen him in some skill stuff, but his competitiveness is what drives the kid to be really, really good. And he's super competitive. He wants to win at everything. When you go watch AAU basketball or high school ball, there's kids that 9 out of 10 of them are enjoy playing and they're having a good time. And but the like, tough physical, this is what it takes to win this possession, I'll do it, is Terrence Ford. He's so talented. He can shoot the ball. I do think learning from Caleb a lot on, you know, Isaiah Nelson benefited a lot from Caleb in terms of the lob passes at the rim, and Caleb could see so much of the play before the defense even reacted. He knew what was going to be open. I think Terrence was able to sit back and pick up on a lot of that. You know, he's still in film sessions. He's still doing all those things last year. It's not like he just disappeared for a year, so he got to see and experience what it took to win at a Division I level. His freshman year, he was a good individual player, didn't have great team success. And then last year, he got to see some pretty good team success and what it takes. And I think that'll benefit him. He's going to be tremendous for us this year. I'm going to knock on wood that everything stays healthy and everything happens. But he's putting in the work. He gets in the gym every day, multiple times a day. He wants to be a really good basketball player.
If people watched you guys and sort of watched kind of how you guys worked the huddle, they could sort of pick up on some things that, to kind of borrow a football phrase, I mean, you're essentially like the offensive coordinator. Kind of talk about you guys kind of coming about those roles, and then even is it more commonplace now on basketball staffs than maybe people realize?
It is. It's trending that direction in college basketball a little bit more. Alabama does it. I actually was fortunate to be the offensive coordinator at my last stop at Charleston Southern for the last 4 or 5 years, so being able to do it there. Coach Jamie did it at Buffalo. And then Derek helped coach the defense at Alabama. And so we have distinct sides of the ball that I'd sit up and watch NBA playoff film. I was watching Boston Celtics film this morning before I came over here on only the offensive side of the ball. Don't ask me a defensive question. I'm not going to probably know the answer. And so it allows me to dig way deeper into watching more film and doing way more things than just saying, okay, everybody is going to help coach a little bit of everything. They don't do it in football. In football, they do a pretty good job, defense and offense and different positions and things like that. And so, and Coach, what Coach B does is he does a great job of knowing his strengths, knowing our strengths, and blending in, okay, well, if T's sitting up till, which my wife hates, if he's sitting up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching EuroLeague basketball late game down by 3 plays with 7 seconds to go, well, when there's 7 seconds to go, he's going to have 7 of those ready to go. Let's play on that strength and use him for that. Same thing with Derek on the defensive side. And so that's kind of where I think it'll trend that direction even more as some of these college coaches are continuing to bring in NBA guys onto their staff and stuff like that.
I do want to ask you, and we talked about all the different roles that you performed. Well, you have been an acting head coach for one game. That was quite an experience, because for those who don't remember, Coach Hodson was waiting on his son Jet to arrive, and he was going to try to come to Texas State, but he decided, hey, I better stay back. I don't need to risk it. So you were the acting head coach for that game on the road, a game that we won on the road. So how much advance notice did you have on that, and what was that whole experience like?
Yeah, so I remember we were playing Texas State on the road, and coach had said he was going to fly down the day of the game, and he thought he'd be able to make it. He called me at like 8 in the morning and said, hey, everything good? He's like, my plane leaves at such and such time, and I'll be there probably like an hour and a half before the game. I'm going to hustle over to the gym. He said, that's the plan right now, 90% sure. He called back. It had to be. I think the game might have been like at 4, and he called back at like 1. We were about to do our last stuff and then leave for the gym. He's like, I just can't risk it. I'm going to need you to coach the team. And Texas State game was a much better result. I coached one game at Charleston Southern. Our head coach got COVID during COVID, and we were down 3 of our starters, and I had to coach that game. And the result wasn't as pretty as this as the Texas State. But then I'm hearing at Texas State, you know, like how long it's been since we've won there, yeah. And they're playing good ball. And I'm like, oh, man, and we're down bodies. We got guys that are hurt. And, you know, we were hoping we could get some good minutes out of some guys that had been out. And then Zay gets hurt the start of the game, and we're playing Noah, and please just hold on. And the guys played so hard. I remember our blue collar score for that game was super high. Our guys played really hard. And for B to be able to stay home and trust the staff, it was cool that he was able to do that with us and still be able to be there for the birth of his kid. And the rest of the staff, everyone had to step up. Jamie had to do it a little different. Derek had to do it a little different. And so it was a cool experience. But I'm glad we got the big fella back on the sideline for the rest of the games.
So there was a lot of talk, and I know at all these caravan stops, the way folks bought in coming down the stretch comes up a lot. But I don't want to talk even about kind of the big picture. I was specifically about the Troy game, the first national TV game in 27 years here. And so for somebody who's like, for an Arkansas State lifer, then to go back home and watch the clips on that game and just see the way it sounded, like it, you know, gave me goosebumps. But like for you, like what did it show you guys is kind of what this thing can get to?
We'd heard crowds from like what the crowds used to be and stuff all year. And I thought we had good crowds all year. That Troy game was obviously remarkable in terms of the crowd. These are the best towns to coach college athletics in. Towns, you're not in Miami, you're not in Tuscaloosa, is a great college town to coach. Jonesboro is an awesome town. You got really good, hardworking people that want to be invested in the program, and they put their hard earned money into the program, whether it be supporting or buying tickets or whatever it is. And so to put out a good product, when we had that game, national TV, the blackout, all the supporters that we had that came out of that game, we're like, okay, well, that if we can keep this thing going, that's going to be the baseline of what it looks like in this place going forward. And you know, you just want to keep that momentum going, built into a good recruiting class, which hopefully will build into a good summer and a good year next year. But I'm telling you right now, the town, it is a cool city, a lot different than Charleston, where I lived for 9 years. But it's for a college town, and what you want as a college coach, these are the type of towns that you want to coach ball in, because people get behind the footballs and the basketballs and the baseballs, and whoever's hot, they want to come be a part of that. And that fan support, hopefully we'll have it next season, and you just got to build off it and keep the momentum going.
Yeah, I'm going into year 20. I can't remember more excitement going into a basketball season than what we're going into. What are you most excited about for next year?
Monday's workout, our first workout with our guys. To be honest, I love being on the floor with the guys and blending the new personalities and teaching the new guys and watching Isaiah Nelson teach Rashad Marshall what we mean by something on the floor, because he's been through it, or watch T Ford teach Cody Head. We talk about this angle on a ball screen, why we do it like that. And so being able to see the new guys get taught by the guys from last year and watching that all blend in, I do think the expectations are high. I do think the hype is hopefully for real on this coming season. We're diving into areas this summer. When you have that success last year, you don't want to lose any momentum. We're working twice as hard as what we were last year when we got the job to make sure that we build on the momentum. But I'm just excited for the group to get here and kind of watch the – hopefully have the similar growth to what we had last season.
I'll ask my last one right here. I'll admit it's pretty random. Most of the team as a staff, you go watch Arshon King in the Hurricane Classic at Jonesboro High School.
Yep.
He's the MVP of the tournament. When it's over, the Arkansas State basketball team and staff – went around Don Riggs, Hurricane Jim, picking up trash. Yeah. And it wasn't because it wasn't for the cameras, because you didn't know there were any. Why'd you do that?
The community is important. It just goes back to what we talked about with the support of the community. I don't have my job if it's not the community. I don't have the ability to coach these young men if it isn't for people in the community support. And so the community, Isaiah Nelson doesn't stay here if it's not for the community. So whenever we go out in public, whenever our guys represent Arkansas State, whether I don't even know if any of them, half of them were in Arkansas State gear, but people know who they are. But to teach those young men that do the right thing no matter what, and it'll take care of itself. We're not going to do it because such and such is watching, and Coach B does it. And so, you know, when we leave a meal in a hotel and somebody gets up and forgets to throw his trash away, we're hoping Darian Ford shouts at him and says, hey, come back and clean up your meal and toss it in the trash. And, you know, taking care of the community. And Coach Swift over there is a good friend of the program. And so we're not going to go in someone else's gym and leave it the way it was being left by other people.
Man, this has been fun. It's been worth the wait.
Yeah.
Getting you in here, Coach.
Hopefully I lived up to the gold medal hype from last week, and I enjoy getting to sit down with you guys.
Perfect way to follow up Al Joyner from last week. More to come right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours, welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Kavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Kavanaugh's entire selection of both new and pre-owned vehicles at KavanaughCars.com. Big news this past Wednesday. It was announced that Tommy Raffo would not be returning as the head coach of the A-State baseball program after 16 seasons in charge of the program, a school record 382 victories. And just on the personal side, and I know you feel very similar to the way I feel with Coach Raffo, just not a better guy.
Is not. No.
You can possibly get to know, and we've been able to spend a lot of time with him over these past 16 years. And just tough anytime you see a friend go in a position like this, but Tommy Raffo is certainly a great friend.
He is that. Yeah, you can't beat him in just terms of quality person and the respect level he has around the game, unparalleled. So, yeah, you thank him for what he did for the program, and that's really just one small part of it. The really way to, for the way the university and the way he represented the community, just, as you say, kind of first class in every way.
When you look back at his legacy – and I know the past six seasons or so have been rough. There's different reasons for that. But early on in his tenure in particular, there was a stretch, and I think people forget, there was an eight-year stretch where his teams won multiple games in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, and A-State was the first program in Sun Belt history to ever say that. So it was, and I remember our buddy Ed Way used to say, death taxes and Tommy Raffo going deep in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. Yeah. But it was always fun because you knew once he got his teams to the conference tournament, they were going to make some noise.
It's funny that you mentioned, honestly, until you said Ed Way, I thought you were about to say Jay Walker, because he would say the same sort of stuff. Our guy, the voice of the Cajun down there, the same sort of thing. He's just, golly, you get down here and have to play these guys.
Of course, the closest we ever came to winning a Sun Belt Conference championship back in that 2012 season, we were five outs away. We were leading ULM with one out in the eighth inning of that game and came so close. He was the Sun Belt Conference Coach of the Year that season, but Look, I know it was a very tough decision for Jeff Purinton as well, but unfortunately, part of what happens in the world of collegiate athletics, and hopefully you get somebody else in here that can have success and have some more resources to have that kind of success that this program needs to compete in one of the better conferences in the entire country.
All the things, you know, people pointed out, they're not news to anybody in terms of the challenges, right? I mean, everybody knows the things that makes that job hard. But here's the thing, and this is, I would assure anyone who's concerned otherwise, there will be no shortage of interested, qualified candidates. Because for all the things that we talked about here, or people have talked about coming on to make that a difficult job, there's still only about 350 of them in the country. And this one's one of the five best baseball conferences probably in America. So there will not be a hard time finding somebody who wants to come take on the challenge.
Other news this week, big week for track and field. Selassie Samprom is headed to Eugene after her top 10 performance at the West Prelims in Fayetteville. She's now getting ready to compete in the women's shot put in Eugene at the Outdoor Championships. Good luck to her. That's going to be this Thursday. And we mentioned this last week. Selassie, the first NCAA championships qualifier in the women's shot put since Erin Farmer in 2017. And as you mentioned last week, she's the last A-State athlete
sure is
going this year. And Howl on Wheels, the road shows continued last week in Jonesboro and Mountain Home. Thanks to everybody for coming out to those. Always a lot of fun. We've got one more event coming up Tuesday, June 18th. That'll be in Fayetteville. So that'll do it for the road shows. But fun just getting to hang out with the coaches and the administration, and fun seeing the kind of crowds that we have over the last couple of weeks. Anything else you got?
Yeah, you know, kick times and TV assignments for the first four games of the year are out.
All right, let's hear them.
Well, we know we're opening at home, and so who the hell cares what TV it's on? Coming up 6 o'clock
That's
on
right.
the 31st.
We want to see you there.
6 o'clock on the 31st, 6 o'clock the next week, September 7th against Tulsa, and then the game at the Big House against the defending national champions is September 14th. It's on Big Ten Network.
Tell me 11 a.m.
At 11 a.m.
Yes.
And then the next week in Ames, that'll be on ESPN Plus against Iowa State. That's a 1 o'clock kick.
All right. I can take 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Always appreciate the early kickoffs on the road and being able to get home at a decent hour that night. 6 o'clock kicks at home and early kick times on the road. That's what we live for. Football season is going to be here before you know it. Hey, what a great visit with T. Butters.
Really enjoyed that, yeah.
And we gave him a hard time about getting him in. We were trying to line up schedules there for a while, but glad he was able to come
well,
in.
Well, yeah, it busts his chops a little because in the season, like they're kind of their weekly routine, the time where we usually sit and record this, didn't fit it very well.
No, it didn't.
And so it's good to get him in here. And it was a matter of time. And like, and I could say with all sincerity, it was worth the wait.
We always appreciate you listening. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.